Mindfulness and Meditation. All you really need to know about mindfulness and awareness. An audiobook by Andreas Gregori and Jero Manku Bodhidharma Panji. Hello and welcome to a new audiobook. My guest today is Jero Manku Bodhidharma Panji, a Shiva Buddhist priest from Bali. Hello and welcome.
Thank you.
The title of the audiobook series is Stop the Blind Flight, All You Really Need to Know About Awareness and Mindfulness. First of all, I would like to know what mindfulness and awareness means to you.
Okay.
And the second question after this is it the same or are there any differences between mindfulness and awareness?
Okay, I'll address the second one because it answers the first. Mindfulness in itself depends on awareness because you have to be aware to be mindful. I think a lot of people don't understand what mindfulness means. I understand in Germany, for instance, there is no word for mind. So it gets confused with thinking mind. It's just one aspect of mind. Mind is a universal thing. Mind is like consciousness and awareness meets, not in a cafe, but in you. And awareness is really, a lot of people have different levels of awareness. There's ordinary awareness, which is, it's cold today. It's cold for me because I come from Bali. Mm-hmm. This is very simple. Mm-hmm. There's awareness of, my senses tell me a thunderstorm is coming.
It's more like a feeling.
Yeah, and there's different levels of feeling as well. I mean, the awareness based on senses alone, like us, we have five senses. Some people say six senses, but the six senses are feeling. Okay, so wait for it. It's not fabricated. It's what we consider to be reality. If you bump yourself, it hurts. Or I have a common joke, which my teacher mentioned once, the difference between sensual and kinky, for instance, is one you use the feather and the other you use the whole chicken. So what I'm trying to say is that all sensation is just that. Sensation is a part of your awareness, yes, because it's either painful or pleasant. And we forget to recognize it's just a sensation. And we identify it as being part of ourself. But it's not who we really are. It's just a sensation. Now, this is part of awareness. But then there's different levels of awareness. You can be aware from your feeling, which is more subtle, that perhaps somebody is thinking something ill of you or that something's happening, you feel something, and this is a feeling level. Now, that's all very well, and put together in one is only a part of mindfulness.
So mindfulness is the sum of a lot of other things?
Absolutely, absolutely. Mindfulness is a method that we practice to become aware. Cognizant.
So is mindfulness the way to awareness?
Thank you. A more pure awareness of the true nature of reality. Now that sounds like true nature of reality. Oh, I like the sound of that. I want that. Where can I buy that? No, you can't. You have to experience it. All of what I'm going to be talking about from my practice is about what it really is. It's all about the experiences we've all had in our lives lead up to this moment now. In fact, our consciousness now, our mindfulness now is dependent on what we've learned before, which is a whole series of nows.
And what we are expecting in the future.
Yeah, but that you don't know what the future is.
No, but I have thoughts about it.
Of course, but they're just thoughts.
Yes, but maybe I don't know that's just thoughts. Maybe I think it's the reality.
You know, it's actually far better not to try and set up the future because it's not what you think. It will be what it will be because it is what it is when it happens. And that's a difficulty for everybody, me included, is that we have this idea that we've got a good idea of what's going to happen because of what happened before. And this is part of what we call conditioned mind. Because we were brought up, and I tried to give across the understanding that mindfulness is all about an investigation so that you can actually understand and appreciate now and be completely present. So that predicates, I mean, to predicate that, you have to actually investigate. That's what mindfulness is about, mindfulness meditation. It's about the investigation of what's arising now. So you were born. Okay, that was kind of quite a shock.
Why? I don't remember, you know, I was so small.
Well, that's one of the reasons you don't remember is because there was no frame of reference, perhaps. And also because maybe it was such a shock. It was too difficult. You come from a womb, okay, which is a kind of nice, comfy, hydraulically, you know, it has its own suspension, so to speak, inside your mother. You're fed and watered with a pipe. It's constant temperature, so it's a controlled atmosphere. And you're, it's really quite amazing. And all of a sudden you're born and all of your senses become very raw. It's cold. It's loud. You can't see properly, but it's bright. You can't, there's no visual acuity, I suspect. Your hearing is, you don't know what you're hearing. It's just noise. Before it was like, boom, 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 boom.
Constant.
Well, sometimes it speeds up, sometimes it slows down, depending on whether your mother's running for a bus or whatever. But you don't even know what that is. There is no meaning. There is no meaning. So I guess what I'm trying to say is when you're born, this is when condition begins. And then there's language. In languages, like, I mean, if you're an Eskimo, you have many words for the weather and the area you're in. If it's a hot place or a cold place or German language, you don't have a word for mind. I mean, there are various languages. You know, I speak three languages and you have to talk about some things using more words or less words, depending on that language. So language itself, like as Chomsky said, creates our perception. We will see things because that's the language that we've been given because we're meant to see those things. Some people, I expect, but I don't know and I don't have any examples, wouldn't see certain things because they have no word for it. So there's no concept of it. All mind is condition. It's Buddha mind. Mind is Buddha, but we can't see it. We have no idea of it. Just like a baby being born, you have no idea. No idea? Yeah, thoughts will arise naturally because we have brain. Intellect's something else. Thoughts just arise naturally. You breathe naturally. You're an organism. You have genetic codes built in so that you have, you know, various responses to stimuli for your survival as a species, as a human being, as whatever. I mean, animals have it, plants have it, we have it. We're part of this amazing organism called the Earth, and it's quite profound as a system. But in and of itself, seeing it and having an intelligent view of it is one thing, but understanding it,
if we talk about mindfulness, sooner or later we'll meet Buddha.
You develop Buddha mind.
Yes. And Buddha told us that life is suffering.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? And if it's true, why should we live if it's suffering? Who wants to suffer?
I agree. Who wants to suffer? But that's part and parcel of it. You wouldn't know suffering if you didn't have happiness. You have brief moments of happiness and joy in your life. Things make you laugh. Things make you cry. And some people actually seek for the happiness that never ends. But you can seek it in two different ways. You can seek it in the way of, I'm going to take drugs forever. And of course, your body can't sustain it and you can't get high like you used to. You can go after money. You can go after material things, things that you're attached to. You make attachment to things. This is suffering itself. And without recognizing the nature of the happiness, the true one, is freedom itself. The Buddha, I mean, historically, the story says the Buddha was a prince and he was kept away from the normal world full of suffering by his father, who didn't want him to go out because he didn't want to lose his son. Knowing full well that this young man this young boy would grow up to become king of the world, so to speak. But he left. He was taken out and he saw, what is this? This is death. Will that happen to me? Yes, it will. These are like preliminaries in order to get you motivated to do practice. I don't know whether that actually happened. I wasn't there at the time. So I can't, you know, definitively say it. It's a good story, though. I mean, most of the stories we get are to inspire us. And I love that. I love the beauty of the creativity of humanity that we have so many stories in Bali. Within the Hindu context, we have Ramayana, we have Mahabharata, and then we've got the more heavier thing of Bhagavad Gita. These are the rules, you should follow them. But it's not necessarily just rules, it's wisdom. There's the Upanishads, there's this and the other things, so much stuff. But the stories themselves, what makes it so special in terms of inspiration is that you can go into a village, in a traditional village, and they will do a ceremony in the village to maybe replenish the good energy in the village, for instance, to re-up their connection with God or whatever it is. And then there will be dance and music. There'll be shadow puppetry. There'll be singing. We call it kikawin there, where they'll be singing stories that come from holy books that are wisdom. And the only way that people used to get that, because they couldn't read when they were, you know, we're talking 200, 300, 400 years ago, they didn't know how to read. What did they need to read for? They didn't use script. You know, that you go to the market, you buy things, you can count, that's good enough. Okay, and you know how to grow your crops and rice, and you know how to do wood carving and painting and dancing and all that sort of thing. You don't need to write things. That's for intellectuals. Very few of them. And priests. So they would hear the stories and see the stories and hear the wisdom and see the wisdom and experience it that way. But what is wisdom? Wisdom arises out of experience. Where does the wisdom come from? Well, you have to practice mindfulness to recognize it.
But how to practice mindfulness?
How to practice mindfulness? I could say it's very difficult because most people are looking for something, but they don't believe it. You might mean it's free. I thought it would be really expensive. Oh, what do you mean? It's so easy. It has to be hard. And so they predicate what they're looking for on, or it must be like this. And of course, they will find what they're looking for. But what they're looking for is what they'll get. And that's what I keep saying to people. What you see is what you get. But why do you see what you see? Because you're not practicing a fundamental practice of mindfulness and awareness to the true nature of your being. You're working through your condition. Everybody's walking around with these colored glasses on. You know, just to use one sense. And they're looking at the world through their culture, their condition. They believe their emotion is their feeling, which is not the case. That's just emotion. It works in tandem with, you know, fabricated thinking mind to create mayhem. You know, I want a car like that. It looks much better than mine. I want none now. You know, we follow all these things and we fall prey to things like advertising because we think, whoa, that looks really good. I need that. You know, you were told you need it. You don't really need it. And then you'll look upon the world, and if you're an angry person, you will, you know, to justify your anger, your pain inside, you will make other people angry, but you don't see you're making other people angry because that's an unconscious thing out of your behavior. And then you make these people angry and you go, see, it's not me, it's them. And you create mayhem in the world. Sad people, unhappy people, depressed people, ecstatically happy people, rich people, they're scared to lose their money, poor people. Actually, possibly some of the most blessed people, except maybe they have no idea that they're quite rich because their reference point, their understanding, their condition tells them they're poor.
So what we have to do is to change the reference point?
Change the view. In Buddhism, you'll often hear people talk about wrong view. Right and wrong is sort of really not where it's at. I mean, that's just a mode of discriminating awareness. You know that if, you know, like morality, you don't need rules to tell you what's a good thing or a bad thing. You already feel it in your heart. You know that if you kill somebody, well, you wouldn't want to be killed, would you? And you know that when you snuff somebody out, that's not a very good thing. And it has repercussions. It's the same as if you steal or lie or cheat or do anything or talk gossip or hold on to a feeling of ill will towards somebody. This is, you're creating a problem. why are you creating a problem? Mindfulness is more, it goes deeper than that. You start to go through the layers. But what motivates people to practice mindfulness? Like the story of the Buddha before, he went out from the palace and he saw, oh my God, there's sickness. And he said to his companion, will I get sick? Maybe. Yes, I think so. Will I die? Yes. What is that? That's hunger. Oh my goodness. What is that? That's sickness. Yes. Oh, what is this? Old age. My goodness. Will I become like that? Yes, you will. Well, how? So he decided he would investigate. So he went through all these austerities for 6 years. He ran away from the palace, cut his hair. I don't know what he took his clothes off and gave his horse back and probably, you know, he left his wife. And the extreme went from one extreme to the other.
But how to practice mindfulness?
It's been done for thousands of years under different names, within the auspice of various religions, but in fact, it's more of a spiritual practice. In fact, it's a very personal practice. I mean, I've met farmers who are far more profoundly mindful than some of the so-called spiritual practitioners that I've met, particularly in Asia, in the centers like Ubud and in Bali, there's a particular place. And I'm going to offend people. I call it woo-woo. I think it's like it's a spiritual theme park because there's all these people who take bits and pieces of, oh, I learned this from this teacher and I learned this from this teacher. And they do all these amazing so-called tantric and, you know, amazing spiritual things that are just things. And people get so distracted and so disturbed by these things because that's all they are, just bits of things. And then move on to the next thing. They move on. Oh, I'm looking for this. I'm looking for that. They don't even know what they're looking for. They are looking for something, but they get swayed because they're so programmed or conditioned. So people are conditioned to look for things that, oh, yeah, this is cool. This is, oh, you can do this. Oh, this is a quicker way. Oh, this is, oh, no, this is more real. Clicky words that, you know, they pick up on. And it's not coming from tradition. Then people have learned to not trust tradition and not trust, you know, the old ways because it failed. In their minds, they see it that it's failed. So in terms of the spiritual sense, mindfulness is not new. It's been practiced for thousands upon thousands of years. And I prefer personally myself to trust a lineage of teaching that attracts me in the first place and that I test out with teachers who've been down the path, who I'm attracted to from my feeling that I begin to recognize because they've helped me to find that. And then if I have difficulty, because everybody has a dark side, and this concerns me that people are throwing the concepts of let's do meditation. Look, samurai practice meditation so they become efficient killers. Doesn't lead to enlightenment. Meditation doesn't mean you become enlightened. It just means you become more focused. Maybe you're able to concentrate better. Maybe you can be more present. But without anything else, a practice of mindfulness that goes with it, like mindfulness meditation, this is just the beginning of the journey. Mindfulness is simply the beginning. It goes deeper and deeper. You will, in spiritual practice, uncover because you're looking to deconstruct your condition, you will discover your dark side.
That sounds not funny. Deconstruct condition, found my dark side. This doesn't sound funny. It's not a lucky way. It's not a happy way.
No. Who said it has to be?
It goes about enlightening. It must be happy.
In the movies, yes. well, quite frankly, yes, because we're fed so much. You know, there's always a happy ending. And there is in this story. There is a profoundly beyond happiness ending, a blissful ending. But it takes time. The only way you're going to know the light is to see the dark. And that's the unfortunate thing. Because we live in a dualistic viewpoint of the world, there is a point where you get beyond that. Really. Really. You know, it's like pain itself. It's pleasant. It's painful. It's the same thing. It's just sensation. When it comes to, it sounded like, you know, when I was saying before about deconditioning, and it sounds more like, what do you call it? Torture, you know, where they break people. No, I'm not talking about that. That's dark. I'm talking about people finding the true nature of reality without the overlay. It's like you go to an old building. We were in Berlin and we were in the eastern part. And I looked at the walls and there was some damage. And then I looked at the wall and I could see there was layer upon layer upon layer upon layer upon layer upon layer of paint. For some reason, when they renovated, they just painted over the top of everything and filled things. But I went, there's history here. And then I equated it to people themselves. They have all these layers. So they're not conscious of what's underneath in their conditioned mind. They only see what's at the front. And then they put another coat of paint over it when they don't like it. And it's a bit like going, I'm really distracted and I'm unhappy. My girlfriend left me. I think I'm going to go and have a kebab. What? Why did she leave you? She said I wasn't very good. At what? I don't know. Wow, you're just happy to just let somebody... Did you love her? Oh, yeah, I think. What? That's not life. That's just, okay, I'm just moving on to the next fix, quick hit. And I go back to the layers. So as you start to take the layers off, you know, you might come down to where they used to use lead paint. That's dangerous. Yeah, and then you go past that layer. Oh, asbestos. Well, that's really bad. Then you keep going. And then it's clean. And you've got the original material. And what do? You put another coat of paint on it. No, you don't. You go, the original material looks great. Or no, it doesn't. I think I'll put a coat of paint on it. It's then your choice. Prior to you actually investigating, you have no choice. Underneath everything, this is what I try to talk to people about in a very simple way, is that how you experience the world is predicated by your feeling that most of the time we run away from. Nobody wants to look at the pain in their heart. Why? Because it's painful. It's like the woman who sits there and she's really disappointed with the marriage and the kids are driving her crazy. And she talks to her best friend. Oh, what am I going to do? It's so difficult. And the best friend goes, I don't want to hear about this. I'm in the same boat. Shopping. Let's go to the mall. And they go to the mall and they end up in further debt. Their husband comes home really upset. Why did you spend more money? Kids, shut up. You know, oh my God. And it just completely compounds things because people are avoiding. And that's a very simple thing. But think about the deep things. Fear. Insecurity. Think about what it was like when you were born, when you were vulnerable and innocent. And then you start to recognize things and they get meaning in everything, but you were already innocent and vulnerable. And that's the most powerful place to be in because then you can change everything. But it's scary. Yes, of course, because that's your natural reaction to that situation. But in fact, it's empowering. You have choice. That's freedom. So you can see it's very complicated for people or it's very simple. You choose. And that's the point. People don't recognize they have choice. They think, and I mean that pointing at my head for the recording's sake, they think that this is the way things are. And I will commonly say to people when they ask questions, I go, oh, so you think? And they go, what is your feeling? What are you feeling? I'm lucky I have teachers who helped me as I started to uncover more things about self-centeredness, self-pity, so many what we would consider to be, that's not a very nice emotion. No, that's my feeling. Why am I like that? Why am I self-possessed? Why am I so insecure? Because I am. But where did that come from? This is the investigation. And if you do meditation, you will bump into this at some point in time. And you'll either go, no, I'm not looking there. Or you go, I need to look at this. And if you're on your own, sitting in your room somewhere without support, I don't recommend that. I read somewhere recently that before some people are allowed to do a particular Zen retreat, the master will check them out. And if they're psychologically unbalanced, he or she, I don't know whether it's a he or she, it recommends that they go and get some help to balance out, you know, a serious problem before they can actually engage in. There are some people who practice in Buddhism who say, yes, you can practice, but you do it this way. Don't go in all the way at first. Deal with the difficulty that is most obvious, you know, your paranoia, your psychotic episodes, so to speak. Because people who are unbalanced like that, when they enter into mindful meditation, can often it leads them into places where they may not be able to cope or handle it. And it becomes very difficult for a teacher or even their own community to help them. So it should not be taken so lightly, and that's why I'm reticent with all these mindfulness courses and people going, oh, good, come to my course. It's 1,500 euro and it's just for 3 days, or it's 2 days on the weekend and blah, blah, blah. Well, okay, so you're doing it for money. This is a profound practice. It's not for sale. You don't own it.
We talk about the dark side of us. Could you please explain what you mean if you talk about the dark side?
Again, it's a fabrication again, because like I said earlier on, how do you know, to use the Buddhist terms, Hindu terms, samskara, which is suffering, and nibbana, which is freedom. How will you know if there's no comparison? Well, going to your dark side, as I just said, it enables you to clear away the obscuration and the defilement of the mind, if you can understand those words, those things which are holding you back, they're not necessarily all, you know, you're not a mass murderer or a rapist or something like that, although everybody's completely capable of doing that. It's about not looking at those things which are sitting in your feeling. It might be something as simple as like you have an aversion to something, but you've buried it, just like you buried the memory of your birth. It's in your body. You can't remember it. Why? It's such a shock. A lot of people have very profoundly painful experiences in their childhood from abuse and things like this. This is all real. That's where a lot of aberrant behavior comes from, but they bury those experiences. And it's like one of those things. You can go to psychotherapy for 25 years and they make a lot of money out of you. Or you can sit down and you can just open and look at those feelings as they arise. Don't look for them. Because what you're doing is, like I said before, mindfulness is investigation. That's all. It's almost like it's a passive thing in a way. You sit down and you meditate. That the best way to do it is, here's the guidebook, is to do it with your body. Focus on your breath. Watch the sensations arise. Sooner or later, once you've got to the point of being very, very comfortable at recognizing every sensation, is it good? Is it bad? Is it neutral? And then your thinking mind runs off, come back to your breathing or whatever it is you use in your meditation to focus and bring yourself back into the moment. And then you're just simply watching everything. What did I just say? Watch everything. You see everything as it arises. Eventually, there's emotion and mental states. So these things that are unconscious will flow to the surface, because most of the time we've muddied everything up so you can't see them. When you let things become quiet, they will naturally arise. And then you're investigating and you go, oh, do I really feel like this? Am I that sort of person? That's bad. No. It's not bad. It just is. Just relax. Just look at this. See it. People have this self-judgment, and this is what holds everybody back. And it's one of the most prevalent things that I see. For years, I've been talking to people, how do you see yourself? Are you a bad person or are you a good person? Do you judge yourself? This is part of mindfulness practice where you, oh yeah, I do actually. I don't think I'm capable of doing this, or I'm not good enough, or flip it the other way. I'm good enough. I know what I'm doing. Well, either way, you're creating a problem for yourself, because it's not coming from a clear place. It's coming from either you're self-denying or you're too sexy for your own pants, so to speak, arrogance, yeah? And that's not going to help you, because maybe you're not so good at doing what you do. So you're not effective. Reality, and this is very fundamental. This is the basic stuff before you can actually go into the higher practices, which are not really that higher. They're just deeper. You've got to clear away all this mess. One of the things I use to motivate people, which I learned from my teachers, is if you're judging yourself, that means everybody else is just like you. You're judging them. Is that fair? No. Is it? No. You don't want to judge other people for being, you know, down on themselves, full of self-pity. Or maybe you do. Well, then you can stay stuck in your own self-pity. If you want freedom, you want to give compassion to other people, you're going to have to give it to yourself first. This is experiential. You must practice. You don't become a profound footballer without training. You might have an inherent skill, but you have to perfect it. Now, every human being is totally capable of being free. But you must practice to become free.
practice means?
Looking at yourself, investigating through mindfulness practice. I mean, there are many different ways. It's just one view. And for me, this works. And it's fairly quick because you can't escape yourself. And in a sense, that's actually quite, that's profound also, because the idea of self is not bad, but it doesn't exist. I mean, it's an idea only. It's a concept. This is another thing I wanted to explain. In terms of mindfulness, most of the world, and as we experience it and perceive it, our perception is concept. When you recognize it, you think, oh, I'm so stupid. No, I'm not. That's normal. We conceptualize everything. We conceptualize our freedom. We conceptualize our pain. We conceptualize our idea of ourself, of everything. It's a concept. In religion, they conceptualize God, a supreme being that you, I find it rather interesting, you can't see, touch, smell, taste, hear. They won't buy you a drink in a bar. And it's always a male. I don't understand that. But that's obviously a cultural thing. It's another conditioned mind. It's a concept. I don't debate whether there is or isn't a supreme being. I just say I have not met that supreme being yet. But I feel in my heart a unity with all humanity and the nature itself from practicing meditation. The answers are right there, right here. As I said before, mind is Buddha. Some people say, oh, you know, enlightenment's just a thought away. And I say, don't think about it because you've lost it already. That's a nice concept. Yeah. Go play with that for a while. But don't. Sit down. Be quiet. The nature of our mind, okay, how it really is chaotic or it's quiet. Either way, it's still the mind. And this is another thing that people do, that after you've practiced a long time with mindfulness, you stop judging things and seeing them as being right or wrong. You just go, well, that's the way it is. It is what it is after all. I'm sitting here in Essen in a hotel room, and I'm looking out the window at a city. It's not natural for me. I like jungle, I like bush, I like mountains, and I like ocean. But that's a luxury for most. But I'm not judging. I'm just looking, wow, it's interesting how we've rearranged nature. It's not where I would prefer to be. But I'm not judging anymore. I ask everybody, please don't do that, because you're creating mayhem. People who live in the city and have to work, apply heart, 100%. Put everything of your heart into it and you will see who you really are. Put your passion into it. Use your desire. I don't mean the lower end of desire. If the Buddha didn't have desire, the Buddha would not have desired to be enlightened, free. If that prince of the Sakya clan, Sakyamuni, had not left the palace through his desire to free himself from death and suffering, it was desire. But he refined and polished and cleaned himself. He did 6 years of highly difficult training. You know, he did pranayama and ate the air. And he saw his reflection in a river and went, wow, I'm so skinny. And he scared away somebody going to temple. He went, oh, I look terrible. And he developed the middle way. At the same time as the Buddha was there, there were many, many other teachers. He was the one that floated to the top. Maybe because his message was more complete. I don't know. I wasn't there. But that's what we have. And we're lucky as human beings because we have, it's not about religion. It's about having these amazing humans who have the capacity to give us such profound wisdom from their own endeavor. You've got Jesus Christ. You've got the prophet Muhammad. You've got Lord Buddha. You've got Lord Caitanya, Krishna, I mean, and probably many, many more. In fact, at this particular point of time, sitting here, there are many enlightened beings on this planet. Some have the wherewithal and the desire to benefit so many others. Some are, some aren't, but they're already here.
You said we have conditions, we have concepts, but who is this we? Is this our ego?
Ego's not a bad thing. Ego's just given too much power. It works because of two things. We have thinking mind, which is thoughts arise naturally. You don't ever try to stop them, because then you're engaging thinking mind to try and stop them. That's why you just let them go. What is the wonderful, famous thing that they say? You know, water intrinsically is clear, but even if it's muddy, it's still water. If you let it be quiet, like the mind, it will, you know, it settles. The mind will settle. Also, thoughts will diminish. Blah blah blah. I'm different than that. I go, I'm not waiting for that. I don't want to sit on top of a mountain for 30 years to wait for my mind to go quiet. Probably the main reason it'll go quiet is I'll get Alzheimer's. Sorry, I'm quite comfortable with the chaos of my thinking mind. The ego is working with this thinking mind because it's the emotions that we fail to, that's what is masking our feeling and hurting our feeling. And they work in tandem, this emotion. And that's where you develop this, you have this character that's called, you know, my character when I was a child was Ian. It's like I'm in this passion play. I go to school, things happen, and blah, blah, blah. There's fights, there's bullies, there's control, there's pain, there's sorrow. This is like, and people, you know, see movies. Hollywood is based on that. Bollywood's based on that. That's what ego is. The drama. The idea of I am. Well, you are, but not what you think you are. Oops. There's key. It's not who you think you are or what you think you are because of your condition and everything, but you're also not that. You're actually much more than that. It's a fabrication again. I'm Jeromonku Budi Dharma Panji. You're Andreas. Most people are who they think they are. No, they're not. They're much more than that and really much less than that as well. And that's the beautiful part. We're actually very, very simple. And the most amazing thing is in your heart, Andreas, you know what it feels like to love and to have joy. And you recognize happiness and you recognize pain and loss and longing. And there are all these most beautiful, amazing feelings and all of these most diabolical and painful feelings. And that's what makes you who you are. And that's what I find is so beautiful about humanity. You gain wisdom through these things. This darkness we talked about before is profound because when you go through it, because there is another side, you go through it and you understand it with your investigation through mindfulness, you gain wisdom. And the next time you meet somebody who has the same darkness, you're able to help them just simply by just sitting there and listening to them. Or maybe you have some insight that you can offer to them if they ask. You can't tell somebody to do something because you see they're suffering. They have to ask. It has to be an invitation. It has to be polite. And this is really important.
You said I go through the darkness on the other side. But how can I go through the darkness? When I meditate, I'll feel a lot of anger about myself, about other people who hurt me. This is the dark side we're talking about. So now you said, I can go through it. How? How can I forgive, maybe, if forgiven is the answer?
Really good question. First of all, who are you going to forgive?
The person
that created the pain for you.
Yes.
Who is feeling the pain? You are feeling the pain. So who's hurting who?
He's hurting me.
No, that's how you see it. But in fact, you're the one who's doing the hurting because you have the ground for that to be hurt. Otherwise, you wouldn't be hurt. It wouldn't matter. If you did not have the condition, the precondition to be hurt, in other words, in your ego, in your fabricated conceptual conditioned mind, you wouldn't be hurt. You'd go, oh, why did you say that? You wouldn't react. You'd go, oh, why did you say that to me? Well, why did you do that? And they go, I beg your pardon? And they'd be then looking at themselves, at what the pain that they have. So it's about taking full, standing up. You have to forgive yourself by standing up for yourself. There's no point forgiving somebody else or asking for forgiveness from somebody else. You have to do it for yourself. What's forgiveness anyway? It's recognizing it's not your fault in the first place. There is no blame. There is no blame. It's just simply accepting, oh, wow, that's the way I am. Why? Well, you're doing mindfulness meditation. You're doing meditation. I know, you told me. So you look at this pain that arises from what somebody else said. It's nothing to do with them. It's to do with you. So you take responsibility and you watch and see where the root of that is, the root of your suffering. The second noble truth that the Buddha gave, it's profound. There is a root to your suffering in your psyche, in your view, your ego-based, egocentric view. There it is. Oh, my God. But then it goes deeper and more subtle. And then you are able to let go of that pain. Well, you let go of your attachment to the pain, more the point. The pain doesn't go away. It just becomes a part of your story. There's no more reactivity in it. There's no more power in it. You recognize, oh, yeah, that's part of my story. Right now, I no longer react from that. The power, your hook with it is gone. So nobody else can hook you as well. Does that make sense? It's like we all have this Velcro, hooks and loops, and people and breaking it apart. It's like tearing skin. It's painful. But again, what is pain? Pleasure? Pain? There's no fine line. They are the same. When you recognize that, then you will not be afraid to look at the pain you have in yourself. Why? Why would you be afraid? What are you afraid of? Afraid of maybe it won't go away? So you keep it at a bit of a distance. I'll deal with that later. Or no, be brave. I already know you're brave. You're doing your practice of Zen that's difficult. You have to be brave. Everybody has to. What people don't recognize is everybody's brave. You're breathing and living every day. It's not easy. Most of people's lives are difficult, but at the same time, easy. We create dramas for ourselves from our condition. What is a drama for one person, somebody else will look at and go, that's not a problem. Well, it is for me. Oh, let me help you. Do you want help? Yes, please. You have to take full responsibility for your own pain. You're avoiding your own pain by blaming somebody else. You put yourself in that situation. You attracted that scenario. You manifested this other person in your life. Like you manifested yourself to be in that situation and that person to be there. And now you're very happily going along and holding on to your pain by projecting it at them. It's their fault. It's nobody's fault. It's your pain. It's okay. It's all right. Do not avoid that anger. Find time. Stay with it. Stay with it. Stay with it. You will cry. You will scream. You will relive the pain. Stay with it. Watch. You're not going through it again. It's not actually happening to you again. It is still in you, the feeling. It's just a feeling. Watch it. Don't go to your head. Oh, it's just a feeling. It's okay. I'm not. Be right in it. Own it. It's you. It's creating your reality now. You want to stay that way? Do you want to keep suffering every day? Do you want to keep dreaming about it? Motivate yourself. That doesn't mean you lose your mind. You won't. This is your mind. Follow that feeling. Follow it. And you'll see underneath it's hurt. You transform the demon of your need for revenge and oh my God, it's so painful. You can hardly breathe. That's so painful. Why do I feel so much pain? You will ask yourself. Don't engage thinking mind. Stay with the feeling again. This is a process. Stay with the feeling. Stay with the feeling. Breathe. Don't cut off. Stay with it. Don't go to your thinking mind. Don't eat chocolate. Don't look for sex. Don't drink. Don't just, you're sitting, you're meditating. No distraction. Stay with it. Now, if somebody who is new to meditation, I recommend them don't do this alone at home. It's difficult. You need to practice meditation first, single-pointed, focused concentration. That is the fundamental thing. Then you are in a position where you can start to, don't go looking for your pain. It's with you all the time. The thing is, it's unconscious. Not sub, it's unconscious. And we don't recognize it. It's guiding our behavior and our speech and our thinking. And thinking is reactive to whatever is arising. You have this feeling. You've recognized now that you're really deeply hurt. This is practical. This is going to the true nature of reality in a very direct and meaningful way.
You say true nature of reality.
Yeah, without condition. See, that's a condition. That the fact that you buried the feeling, that is part of the condition of your mind. It's conditioned already. So therefore, you manifested this reality. Some people use their thinking mind and go, oh, so this planet really doesn't exist. I'm actually on a fourth dimension. Oh, come on. You know, stop taking drugs. Because people like to do that to escape whatever pain they're feeling in their lives. I'm not saying that it's all a sea of pain. It's not. But you will not discover the potential, the true potential you have, unless you get rid of all this stuff in the way. It's like there are 1,000 veils and it's taking you forever to get through the first three. Come on, it's just curtains. Keep going. Oh, I don't like this one. It's got spiders all over it. Nah, it's in your mind. Keep going. One of them just bit me. Yeah. It's poisonous. I'm dying. Oh, for Christ's sake. We manufacture so much stuff. I mean, look at the industry of movie making. When things go bad, they dig up old vampire movies. Now these days, they've got zombie movies. You know, you can always tell the psyche of a nation by what movies they put out. It's the same with us as humans. We projecting all the time. We project. This is why mindfulness meditation is actually really, really good, because you slow the process down and start to catch yourself. There's nothing to say. Now, you can either practice that and become mute and pretend, or investigate. And then until you finally realize there is really nothing to say, but there's all these people out there who need to understand that, because they're making a lot of noise and building all this stuff and creating chaos for each other from the projection of their mind. And if you have a care, at least for other humans on the planet, maybe you should slow that activity down a little bit, because everything we need is already here. I like to think we don't really need as much as what we think we do. So it's very practical. What I'm talking about is a very practical way of living, where you don't have to suffer every single thing, and you don't have to unconsciously go through your day reactively. You know, people impulse buy, people impulse, you know, react emotionally. It's such a waste of energy. If you practice hard enough, I suspect that you will get to a point where you would see the beauty in every person. The beauty includes the ugliness. There is no difference. It's a profound creation. And we're so fortunate that we are alive and well and living in this world. We're so fortunate we even get the opportunity to be born as a human. It doesn't last forever, life. Death comes without warning. That simple. So if you're looking for your happiness and freedom, you better get started now. Well, what's the most effective way? Start looking. Your heart will tell you.
At the beginning of the audiobook, we talked about the difference between emotions and feelings. Could we get back to this?
Emotions. Part of them are basic reactions to our environment. Some of it's genetic-based, some of it's this, some of it's, you know, behavioral-based because of, you know, our condition and all that sort of thing. But I look at it this way. The difference between emotion and feelings is fairly simple. Somebody who's wearing fashion that's not in fashion, it stands out. And it's a bit uncomfortable, especially for the person who's wearing it, because then they recognize other people are looking at them. So emotion is actually, it hurts your feeling. Your feeling has no form like that. Your feeling is your sensitivity. Your feeling is the subtle side of things. It's not an emotion. Emotion is like right at the top. It's like, you know, like you hit your thumb with a hammer. You blame the hammer. You blame the neighbor who gave you the hammer. You know, you're angry. It hurts. You know, it's a normal reaction. Same with sadness. You know, when you're a child and you're playing with something and it breaks, and you go, oh, it's broken. And then you might get angry after that because you're upset. But feeling is more subtle and it runs deeper. Then it's harder to perceive. It's a lot more difficult to perceive. So feeling is really important. But what we tend to forget is because emotion is something that can mask our feeling, and it feeds the thinking mind. The thinking mind is kind of stupid. Like a computer, if it gets a virus, it does what the virus says. and you're out of control. Whereas you're supposed to be in control of this computer. You're not. Your emotions are in control. This fabricated ego mind. We react to situations. You walk into a place, for instance, if you walk into a place like a restaurant and you have a certain feeling about it, but you ignore that because you're looking at something else. You're looking at the people who are in there, you know, whatever it is. You get distracted. Maybe it's by the waitress or the waiter. Maybe it's the smell. Maybe it's this. Maybe it's that. The gross level. The messages have already been sent to your feeling through your senses. The subtle senses, you already pick up on the feeling, the energy of the place, the energetic, so to speak. So emotion is, it sort of gets in the way, but at the same time, it's really quite profound. Fear is really, really quite a useful thing because if you flip fear over, it can motivate you to do amazing things. Mm. But there's also wisdom. When fear no longer grips you, wisdom mind can arise. Anger, it's sharp. It's like the wind. It happens, bang. You know, like I said, you hit your thumb. When you get over the anger, it's like, oh, sharp, your awareness. Grief, one of my favorite examples, grief, sadness, a deep, deep grief. You lose somebody that you really care about. They die, for instance. And you care so much about them. And we go through all these stages of grieving because we miss them and blah, 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 blah. We get angry. We have regret. We try and write it off. People talk about all these different steps. And it's normal. It's a psychology. It's predictable. But it's also unpredictable because it keeps coming back and coming back and coming back and coming back. The transformation of that grief. If people could see more clearly, if they could relax into that feeling of it, they'd recognize that it's actually very, very beautiful because it's a longing. If you let go of your attachment, of course you loved that person. Of course you cared about them. And of course you missed them. So now you have this profound, beautiful feeling of longing for that person. And it's more romantic than, you know, romantic Hollywood movies or romantic music or, you know, it's a beautiful feeling. And from that feeling, you transform the view of the world into the most beautiful place. Your view changes. No longer are you looking at the world through the eyes of your pain. You're looking at the world through your eyes of appreciation. That's what I'm trying to say about emotion and feeling. Emotion is gross. Feeling is subtle and can run very deep and lead you to a profound altered state in terms of being able to see. The view changes. The view is what it's really all about. The view must change to actually get the true, to understand, to experience the nature, the true nature of reality. I don't pretend that I know what the true nature of reality is, but glimpse after glimpse after glimpse, it's enough to keep me inspired. And it sometimes comes in deep meditation and sometimes it comes from the most simple things like getting out of a car in a mountaintop and going, and it's overwhelming. It's completely empty and the moment is full of bliss. And I used to doubt that when I was younger until my teacher said, that's it. It is. It's gone now. Yeah, don't try and hold on to it. You can't. Let it go. Like any experience in meditation, let it go. You have a piece of chocolate cake. The first time you have a piece of chocolate cake, you go, so you go and have another piece. Is it the same? No. Is it as good? Yeah. But it's not the same because it's not the first time. And this is a problem with us. Like, why does time condense as we get older? It seems to go so quick because we forgot how to be in the moment. It's that simple. The first time you walk in a park as a kid, it seems like days you've been there. Is the sun going to set? You don't think that. It just seems forever because it smells different. Look, this dog poo. Oh, look at this tree. Oh, it's really rough. You know, and it's like, and then, you know, it's all new. But the next time you go to the park, by the time you become like a middle-aged person, you're going to the park. I've been there, done that. You become very boring. What park is it? Have I been there before? I have. Oh, it doesn't matter. Let's walk in from the other side. Why? Well, it's different. You okay, Grandpa? Keep looking for spontaneity and you don't even have to look for it. Just be it in the moment. In the moment, is where everything arises. Your love exists. The beauty exists. The bliss exists. The understanding exists. The wisdom mind exists. The Buddha mind exists.
Thank you very much, Jeru, for this inspiring interview.